Blog Talk Radio.
Save the dates March 13th through 16th, 2014, and join us in Tampa, Florida for the 2014 Physicians Roundtable. Hear over 20 expert speakers. Visit with exceptional exhibitors. Dance to the music of the Island Boys. Get a free caricature done. Relax at the Tibetan Bowl Concert. Get points and inspiration to write. And let's not forget the CME, gift bags, and so much more. The Physicians Roundtable Conferences have always been about bringing the best to the podium, the best in products and services to those that deserve it the most, you. So call us at 717-254-1953 or email us at PureAwMagazine@AOL.com to reserve your seat or exhibit space. MAR Consulting Incorporated, led by Dr. Frank Rossetti and Dr. Judy Mikovits, seeks to understand complex and innovative biological issues to yield unbiased, integrated, cutting-edge information for patients and physicians impacted by some of the most challenging chronic diseases. Utilizing their combined 75 years' experience in tumor biology, immunobiology of retroviral-associated inflammatory diseases, cancer, stem cell biology, and drug development, MAR focuses on research projects, consulting to patients, doctors, academia, and industry, and lecturing without the restrictive authority of vested interest groups following Thomas Jefferson's dictum, quote, "Here we are not afraid to follow the truth wherever it may lead, nor to tolerate error so long as freedom is left free to combat it," unquote. Their website is marconsulting.com or email Dr. Mikovits at jamikovits@gmail.com. A must-read, Plague, One Scientist's Intrepid Search for the Truth About Human Retroviruses and Chronic Fatigue Syndrome, Autism, and Other Diseases. On July 22, 2009, a special meeting was held with 24 leading scientists at the NIH to discuss early findings that a newly discovered retrovirus was linked to chronic fatigue syndrome, prostate cancer, lymphoma, and eventually neurodevelopmental disorders in children. When Dr. Mikovits finished her presentation, the room was silent for a moment. Then one of the scientists said, "Oh my God." The resulting investigation would be like no other in science. For Dr. Mikovits, a 20-year veteran of the NCI, this was the midpoint of a 5-year journey that would start with the founding of the WPI for Neuroimmune Disease at the University of Nevada, Reno, and end with her as a witness for the federal government against her former employer, Harvey Whittemore, for illegal campaign contributions to Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid. On this journey, Dr. Mikovits would face the scientific prejudices against CFS, wander into the minefield that is autism, and through it all, struggle to maintain her faith in God and the profession to which she had dedicated her life. $17.31 pre-order price on Amazon.com.
And welcome, everyone, to In Short Order, the show that brings the experts to you because you deserve the very best. I want to give a big shout-out to Julie. She is responsible for getting our guest on today. She put us in touch, and it is awesome. And our guest today is a woman who knows everything about healthy homes, Caroline, the owner of My Healthy Home. Welcome, Caroline.
Hello. How are you, Sue?
I am great. So... us a little bit about yourself. Let's get to know Caroline a little bit.
Well, my name is Caroline Blazovsky, and I'm a national healthy home expert. And for those of you who don't know what that is, I am an assistant to you. I handle physicians' offices and also clients. And what I do is help people to assess the health of their homes to see if there may be anything in their environment that can be or contribute to them not feeling well. And I've been doing this for about 13 years now, a little over 13, and I truly enjoy my job, and I look forward to helping people kind of assess where they're at as far as their health and their environment.
Awesome. How'd you get into the business? It's an interesting story.
Well, I originally had allergies myself. I was in a different career path altogether, and then I sort of felt that there was a component that was left out when, you know, doctors were looking at allergies and asthma. They were looking at it from, okay, well, what medicine can I prescribe to relieve the symptoms, and not really looking at what was causing the allergy or what was could be potentially causing the symptoms. So that's when I went back and decided I was going to restudy the sciences and got into things like mold remediation and got certified in checking indoor environments. And that's how I basically started to see a correlation between how people live and how they feel.
Right, exactly. And you and I had an interesting conversation the other day, and it brought back a lot of memories. I know when I was growing up, there, my doctor, he visited our home. He actually made house calls, even up to the just a couple of months before he passed away last year. He was still making house calls. They don't do that anymore. What are we missing there?
That's right. And when we were talking about, you know, I always try to bring clients back or physicians back when I'm talking to them about the old Little House on the Prairie episodes where Doc Baker used to go and visit the family and, you know, they thought something was wrong with one of the kids, and then he was able to observe that there were other issues going on because he was in that environment. And I think it's so crucial that people, and especially doctors, when they're doing a diagnosis, I think the more information you can have about a patient, regardless of what that is, whether that's your emotional state, whether it's your physical state, whether it's where you're living, your home environment, your work environment, what you do, what you're exposed to, do you have pets, all of these things help us to make a better diagnosis. And what I so like about the services you offer and the physicians roundtable and what you're doing is that we're trying to make medicine better in all aspects. And I think when you have more pieces to that puzzle, you know, medicine is not an exact science. So what we're trying to do is gather as much scientific data as we can to hopefully come up with a hypothesis as to why somebody isn't feeling well. So the more information that you can provide and gather makes you a better diagnostician. And unfortunately, you know, the way that medicine is now and with the insurance rates and, you know, malpractice insurance, doctors have a very difficult challenge. I mean, it's not easy being a physician, and it's certainly not easy when you have to see multiple patients and you only have a certain duration of time, and you're only allowed a certain duration of time because you have to see other patients. So what we try to do at My Healthy Home and at my company is gather as much information as we can, one for the physician but also for the patient, so that you can take this information to your doctor. And I like when people work with your physician, because I think it's an important component to diagnosing you so that you have all this information that you can present.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, what should we know about our homes? We had that conversation as well. And I didn't realize that people probably don't know what kind of plumbing they have, the HVAC system. They don't know too much about their home. They move in and call it good. So what are we missing here? What should we know about our homes and why?
Okay, so you and I had this great discussion, and you and I are both neat freaks, right? We like to clean. I think we recognize the importance of being clean. And, you know, as the old adage says, cleanliness is next to godliness. So we've got this, you know, understanding. But there's a lot of people out there. Now, I don't know about you, but my mom was always like, okay, you have to clean. You have to, you know, my grandmother was the same way. So it was passed down generation, you know, generation after generation. But a lot of people don't have that education. They may have come from an environment where people were not so clean, and they don't recognize that there's a lot of hazards and things that can go wrong in a home that can really contribute to people not feeling well. Houses are complex. They're not, they're like a living organism almost, and they're always changing. So your home's not a static environment. So you need to constantly evaluate it from time to time and see, okay, let's just do a little checklist. Let's make sure everything's working properly. It can be overwhelming, but it's also part of the, you know, commitment when you take on a home or an apartment or a condo or whatever it is that you're going to live in. So, you know, the first thing is to remember that houses are very complex and they require maintenance and repair, and they contain a lot of materials, you know, from things like carbon monoxide to sulfur dioxide to methane to combustible fuels, volatile organic compounds. Those are the things that can potentially come off, you know, personal care products and renovation materials. So there's a lot of things in a house that can affect your health and need your attention. And if you're not servicing them, of course, then they can accumulate and basically, you know, cause a lot of stress to your immune system and your body.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, what about our plumbing? I mean, how important is it to find out about our plumbing, what kind of plumbing we have?
Yeah, plumbing is actually a really complex issue. I think, you know, when I first got into this business 13 years ago, you know, you start in a certain area. You know, my main focus was mold. And then as you, you know, get and delve deeper into different issues that present themselves over the years, you do recognize that plumbing is a tricky element. You know, when I did plumbing in my home, you've got choices like of using copper or PVC or ABS plumbing, and a lot of these can have health effects. A lot of the plumbing materials that they use will have a label on them, especially if, you know, you're paying attention to California law. A lot of the piping that can be used for plumbing can cause birth defects, and they've been documenting this, and so you have choices. And I think the biggest thing for a homeowner to understand is when you purchase a product, it doesn't matter what it is. It could be a paint, it could be plumbing materials. When you purchase something, you have a choice. And even though it's very time-consuming sometimes, and we all just want to go out and get something, right? We want to get a toilet, we want to get a refrigerator. You want to keep in mind that you actually have a choice in the products that you purchase, and it's worth it to do your due diligence, to look at those products and to see what you're actually getting and do the research. It's the same thing you and I talked about with medicine. You have the option to compound out medicines and take preservatives out of them and, you know, have just the basic fundamental medication, whether that be an antibiotic or it be a pain medication. But doing these things takes time and energy. And unfortunately, if you really are going to have the best health or have the best knowledge and acquire knowledge and be able to really understand what you're putting into your body or what's affecting you, you have to do the research. And I know you're a researcher, so you understand it. Everything requires research. And unfortunately, this requires time and energy. And the products that we purchase, Sue, are not always the healthiest things that you can get your hands on. So, like, for an example, let's just talk about drywall. You know, there's different types of materials that go into drywall. And for people who don't know what drywall is, that's your wall board that's, you know, that frames out your walls in your home. Not all of it is equal. Some drywall has formaldehyde in it. Some drywall manufacturers put vinyl in the product. Some just use gypsum. Some use organic gypsum. Some use recycled gypsum. So here are all these options, and that's why I think it's helpful to work with a consultant like myself to kind of give you those options and say, look, okay, here's the companies, and this is what their products are made out of, and then you can make a better choice. But you have tons of choices as a homeowner, and it's real important to recognize that everything you put into your home, from nuts and bolts plumbing to drywall or whatever choices you make, you typically do have a choice, and you can investigate it to whatever level you feel comfortable to pick a product that's going to be better for you.
Oh, absolutely. And it's going to cut down on some of those health problems. Well, you and I talked also about filter changes. And I actually, you know, I really just didn't realize people didn't change their Hyback filters as often as I do, actually. I change it once a week on Tuesdays, every Tuesday. But how often should they change it and why?
Well, it really depends, too. Like, you have a lot of pets. We discussed that, right? So,
right.
You know, if you're going to have pets and you're going to have dander, you're going to have more need to change it more frequently. But usually I recommend to people, say you don't have pets, about every month and a half, and what you have to do is kind of pull that filter out. And you have choices. Usually I say to purchase a one-inch, a heavy-duty or allergen filter. It just depends on if your HVAC system can handle it. Some systems are designed to take HEPA filters. Some systems are designed to take just what I call the blue traditional filter, which you can basically throw a bowling ball through. It's not really going to take much, but it depends how your system's set up. And some can take the one-inch filters that you can pick up at a hardware store that are the allergen, the heavier pleated. You know, if you look at it, it's a thicker pleat. About a month and a half, you want to evaluate it and see how dirty your filter's getting. Now, if you've got a lot of people in the house and you've got pets, you're going to change it more frequently. And you can tell because it gets coated in dust and dirt and all kinds of stuff. So you can kind of gauge it. But I'd say for a traditional house where, you know, with my filter, I usually change it about every month, month and a half. But, you know, I'm also meticulous and I don't have pets, so that's going to help. But, you know, if you have a forced hot air system, where it's blowing a lot of dust around, and that's when you have vents versus having like a baseboard hot water system, then, you know, you're going to obviously have a filter and you're going to have to change that frequently.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it's just, you know, we kind of got in the habit of doing that, and that was before pets because of the allergies. You know, I just sneeze. If there's a piece of dust somewhere, that's all I can mm-hmm. do is sneeze. So we just kind of got in the habit, and we do use the allergen things and like that. Well, let's talk about mold. We actually have someone listening in, and I'm sure that's why, and he is very ill. Hello, Thomas. Let's talk about mold. Lots of people have mold.
That's right. It's very common, and, you know, depending on where you live in the United States, you know, there's certain regions, the Northeast, the South, are we have a higher water table than, say, if you're living in Nevada or Arizona. So you're going to, you know, have issues where mold is more prevalent. And I think, you know, I always kind of try to explain what molds are. People are always frightened of them, and they're really essential to the breakdown of things in the environment, and they're there for a reason. I'm getting over a cough, and I talked to you about it, so just excuse me if I cough a little bit. Molds can do three things, okay? So when I explain about a mold, you know, you have the spore, which is the fuzzy thing that you see. And then molds also have the ability to put out what we call an MVOC, which is a volatile organic compound that is like a chemical compound, like a VOC, but they're produced by specifically by molds, okay? So you have a mold spore. It's got this ability to put out a volatile organic compound. Some molds also have the ability to put out what we call a mycotoxin. Depending on the type of mold, there are certain molds we call the hydrophilic fungi, the things like Stachybotrys, Chytomium. Those are the ones that have the ability to put out a mycotoxin in addition to the spore and the volatile, and that's what makes them a little bit more severe than, say, a traditional mold that doesn't do that. And then on top of all these things, molds also contain what's called a beta-glucan. And beta-glucans are kind of interesting to explain, but they're built into the actual spore of mold itself. So when those mold spores break apart, they send out beta-glucan into the environment in pieces of the spore. And beta-glucans really haven't been shown to cause any really chronic illness, but what they do is they contribute to inflammation. So, for example, if you were to be breathing in an environment that was, you know, contaminated with mold, these beta-glucans would be accessible to you, can get into your lungs, find their way in, and they can cause inflammation. That's another issue with mold. And then on top of that, if that particular mold were to have a mycotoxin associated with it, that beta-glucan would have that mycotoxin embedded in it, and then that would get lodged in your lungs or whatever part of the body, whether you ingest it or you breathe it in, and then that mycotoxin would get lodged there too. So molds are really complex, and they can do a lot of things. And even though there really hasn't been a lot of studies done on the importance of and the effects that mold can cause. I mean, we know the CDC doesn't want us to have, you know, water damaged areas, and they know that it contributes to asthma and allergies, but there really aren't a lot of studies indicating that they cause chronic illness. My perspective on it is, like, look, if you've got something in your home, a microorganism that can cause all of these things, you don't want it there. I wouldn't want it there. So I don't want it in my home, and I don't want to see it in my clients' homes. And after doing this for 13 years and seeing the results that you get when you remove mold from a person's environment, there's no question in my mind that they definitely contribute to health effects.
Absolutely. So how do you get rid of mold? I mean, say you have, and I'm going to open up the lines here in just a little bit, but how do you get rid of mold? And especially since the mold came in, it's gotten on your furniture, it's gotten on your books, it's gotten on your ceilings, walls, wherever it is. How do you get rid of all of that?
Well, it's kind of complex, too. I mean, molds typically stay when we do mold remediation. I mean, the first thing you want to do is do mold sampling and test your home. And you want to see, you know, where you actually have mold, where the growth is originating from. Typically, we'll see, say we take a traditional house. Let's say we have a colonial home, and we have a basement, and then we have a first floor, and then we have a second level, which has the bedrooms or whatever. We have, you know, we'll take levels and traditionally say the basement's contributing. We'll see elevated levels in the upstairs, you know, portion sometimes, because when you have mold in the basement, it's going to be in the air. So as it flies through the air, it gets upstairs and whatnot. But typically when you clean that up and you clean the basement up and then you retest, the things go away. The problem becomes when we do have these molds that have mycotoxins associated with them, and these things permeate into materials. Typically, it's going to be around the source. So if you have a basement full of stuff and you have Stachybotrys mold, it's going to be predominantly in that area, and, of course, then you're going to be throwing stuff out. You know, depending on the types of molds you have, that's what you want to test. You want to determine whether or not you need to get rid of your items or if they're salvageable. I had a home that we worked on that had Stachybotrys. The home had sat for a period of time, and it was vacant, and they had mold. And you know, of course, everything in the basement, we decided based on the type of mold it was, you know, the homeowner decided to get rid of everything and in the basement. But upstairs in the upper levels where we tested, there were no problems. So, no mold had gotten up there. A lot of the toxic molds, too, are heavier, denser molds. They're not as airborne, which is a good thing. So they don't tend to fly around as much as like a traditional like cladosporium or something. For some reason their genetic makeup makes them a heavier, slimier type of mold, so they don't like to become as airborne, which is good.
Right, exactly. Well, I'm going to go ahead and open up the line. I know that Thomas is listening. Thomas, are you there? Do you have a question?
Yes. What do you do about books? I am a retired librarian. And if you take my books away from me, you might as well cut off a couple of my limbs on my body. I had talked to a rare book librarian who is a good friend of mine. I worked at the University of South Carolina. And he said what they do is they freeze the books and then they vacuum them. And so what I have been doing since we've been having these fabulously cold weather, even in South Carolina, I have put my books out in the carport and left them for days in sub-freezing weather. And then I have tried wiping them off, a horror of horrors, with vinegar. And somebody suggested I've been trying to wipe down walls with vinegar and so on. I had I don't have the exact figure here now, but I had some Metrometrics, I think it was the name of the company, test in my house, and it just had some huge reading. I forget, 20 was that a number? And they said I had all these different molds and so on.
And do you know what kind of molds you had specifically? Like, did you have what we call the hydrophilic fungi, the molds associated with water damage, like Stachybotrys, Eulocladium?
They said, but I don't have that list in front of me. I didn't learn about the show until about 30 minutes ago. But, yes, they did say. And I was just wondering, do you have to get rid of the books, or do you burn them? Or
it really depends, again, like what we were saying, like what type of mold you had. And I think what you were doing in freezing them and trying to salvage them, because I completely understand. It's when people have these issues, some of the things that they have there are invaluable, and you really do want to save them. So, you know, HEPA vacuuming is always an excellent way to go. If you can wipe down the books with, there's certain microbial agents that we use. There's greener products, too, like Pure Green 24. There's a product called Shockwave Shockwave makes an ammonium chloride product that I like, especially when I'm dealing with hydrophilic fungi or molds that are more toxic. And if you can wipe those down, I think, trying the freezing is sounds good to me, and trying to salvage them. It really depends, again, on the type that you had and, you know, the extent, the amount that you had and what kind of environment they were in for a long time.
Yes, well, one of the problems, as I have discovered, and in the South, we have lethal combination of heat, of considerable heat, and this, for example, this past summer when it all got so very bad here in Colombia, out of something like 110 days, the sun came out and quit raining for 5 of those 110 days, and we were in a tropical rainforest. And so if you had some mold to begin with, it just was a kind of a thermonuclear explosion. And of course, the other problem just to continually bore you even further, is the houses in Colombia, for some strange reason, which nobody can quite explain, all of us have huge problems with dust.
Hmm.
And so,
well, what's... Oh, go ahead.
So I'm just wondering, and of course, we've talked about putting in filters which are in the air conditioning units, which are quite expensive. They use ozone filters and that kind of thing, and
mm-hmm.
and I'm just thoroughly at this point stumped. I mean, I've been trying to wipe down walls in my house with vinegar, and I thought I was a clean person until I started trying to really clean the place up, and the dust is just incredible, and it comes back, and I feel like
let me kind of give you a couple things to do. Talking about the mold thing and the mold topic, the biggest thing that's going to help work against mold is dehumidification. And I think, Sue, this is an interesting topic because people don't quite understand how humidity works, and it's kind of complicated. It's not really that easy to understand. And so, for example, let's just say you're in your home and you're upstairs. Let's just say you have three levels of a home, and you're upstairs and your temperature at 80 degrees, your 80-degree temperature, okay? Well, people automatically think in your brain that, oh, the hotter the temperature, the more humidity I'm going to have. It's actually a misconception. So if you were up in your home at 80 degrees, your relative humidity, if you look at like a psychrometric chart, which is what makes people understand how humidity works, at a higher temperature, you're actually going to have a lower relative humidity. So as you come down in your house, so let's say you have 80 degrees on your first floor, then you get to your second floor and you're at 72, and then all of a sudden you're in the basement, and the basement's cooler. Let's say it's 65 degrees. Well, all of a sudden at 80 degrees, you have 35% relative humidity. Well, when you get to that lower temperature, now all of a sudden, because of the temperature decrease, you have 85% relative humidity. And guess what happens? At 85% relative humidity, you're going to have moisture, condensation. And it may not be so, how do I explain this? When you're, like, say you go closer to a block, like say you have a basement. And in the center of the basement, you take a sample of the temperature, and it's 72 degrees. As you go closer to a cement block, that temperature decreases, and it gets colder by the block. And that's when you'll actually get more relative humidity. So say by the block, down on the bottom of your basement floor next to your cement, you'll have 65 degrees. Well, there you've got 85% relative humidity. Now we'll say you're under a box, and you've got boxes in your basement. Now you've got this great environment that molds can form. So again, going back to remember, when your temperature goes up, your relative humidity goes down. When your temperature goes down, your relative humidity goes up. That's why basements become so problematic. And also, the differential between temperatures. So if your basement is 72 degrees, 60 degrees, and the floor of that basement is 50, we'll see a lot of condensation. You never have to see visible water coming in necessarily, but what you'll get is vapor. And when you get the temperatures meeting at a difference, you get a lot of water vapor, and that's enough to make mold by itself. So with this being said, right, the biggest thing that we want to do is control that humidity. And in your basement, wherever you're storing things, your basement's going to have the most humidity. You've got to be dehumidified. So the first thing
everybody
I would do
has
is...
Everybody
yeah, it's this cough. I mean, it just sticks around. But the... you know, you really want to dehumidify in your house, especially if you have a basement, especially if you live in an area where you have high water table. You have to do it. And you have to invest in dehumidifiers that are more commercial grade. Like if you go down to a hardware store and you pick up a dehumidifier that's only going to do 40 pints of water, in the Northeast, it's never going to work. The unit that I have in my own home, I mean, I'm a wholesaler for dehumidifiers, so the company that I sell, they're taking out 90 to 100 pints of water. They're also able to work down at colder temperatures. Not all dehumidifiers are the same. So if you're in a climate where you're going to get colder temperatures at night, for example, you need a unit that's going to be able to work into those colder temperatures. So that's the first thing you need to start doing in your home. Priority, number one, dehumidify. Make sure those basement areas that are low to the ground have less humidity, less water, less condensation. It's going to help prevent bugs. It's going to help prevent dust mites. It's going to help prevent molds from forming. there's a lot of reasons why you want to keep that lower level area of your house extremely dry. And when you have houses that don't have basements, for example, and they're built on slabs, those become major moisture problems because now you don't have a buffer. You have no buffer between you and the ground, and that's why I have a big issue. I went back to school for sustainable design to learn about building envelopes and building, and what I found was that when we built these homes that don't have a buffer, especially in a climate where you have a lot of constant change, the house is 72 degrees, you're running heat, the ground is 50 degrees because we live in a colder climate, you get a lot of condensation that happens between those two temperatures, and they seep into your carpet, your rugs. So if you have no basement, nothing to buffer that, that's just seeping right into your environment. And people who have more asthma, allergies, live on slabs and bi-level homes. And I see it over and over again because of this constant moisture that's just wicking up into the environment, wicking up into all of their stuff, and is just a problem for people who have asthma and allergy triggers.
Well, what happens if you have a home which doesn't have a basement? Many or most houses in the South don't have basements. And
that's
they
right.
But they have crawl spaces under
a crawl
the house.
Space is okay. That's okay. Do you have a dirt crawl space, or do you have cement, or what do you have?
No, it's a dirt crawl space.
Okay, dirt. And is it open to, do you have ventilation in there? Is
oh,
it
yes.
open to? Okay.
Yes, except in the wintertime we close most of it up, but we still have some ventilation. And in the summertime, spring and fall, it's as is the case with, I suppose, virtually every house in the area where I live. I don't know if we just don't, for some bizarre reason in the South, we just don't put basements in homes very often.
Mm-hmm. And a crawl space is okay as long as there's a couple needs being met, right? It's being ventilated. And what you typically have to do is, you know, go into your crawl space. You want to examine it, and you want to see if, you know, how much do you have mold growth? Does it smell musty? Do you get that damp earth smell because it's not drying out properly? Sometimes if the house is sitting on a damp lot, like say you have a lot of trees around your home and your lot doesn't really dry out, you're going to get a lot of moisture that accumulates in that damp earth underneath. And then you can get all kinds of, you know, bacteria, the mold, and things that can grow because it doesn't get a chance to dry out and it's not seeing sunlight. Like when you go into your crawl space, do you have a lot of trees around the property? Do you have...
Oh, God. Oh, God. Heaven. Oh, yes. Well, we have what I call the cockroach of the tree world here. We have pine trees all over the place.
Uh-huh.
And this
is good for the client, people who are listening to the show, to understand. I love trees, right? I'm a green advocate. I'm all for the environment.
But pine trees.
When you build a house and it's surrounded by trees and your house isn't getting a lot of sun, okay, if you have a lot of shade, guess what that does? It promotes dampness. That damp earth that doesn't dry out. And unfortunately, that contributes to mold growth. And if I were you, I would do a mold test. I would do, especially during when you're coming into spring season would be great, do an outside sample, see what your naturally occurring molds are on the outside. Then I would do some samples inside because your problem could be the earth and the dampness, just that the lot that your home is sitting in, and that's what's contributing to the mold. So, like in my property, what I did was I took the trees out around my perimeter of my home so that my foundation can get a lot of sun so that the lot can dry out, and then I planted trees further out in my property because obviously I want trees for the environment. I don't want to be tearing down all these trees, but I just don't want them around the perimeter of my home. They do a lot of other things, too. When you have roots of trees, they actually can suck energy out. The root system will actually pull energy from your home. So if you're trying to be energy efficient, the trees can actually deter that. They can destroy your foundation. They can take the energy and the heat away from the house. So there's a lot of things that trees can cause damage to homes if they're not properly in the right spot. So it's better to not really have them around the lot. If you understand what I'm saying, Sue, like you want that foundation to breathe and be able to get sun.
Exactly. Well, if it's dirt under there, how do you keep that dry? I mean, are you talking leach beds or what are you talking to keep it dry?
Well, typically it'll dry out if it's properly ventilated. If his space is ventilated, it'll get air. But if he's got all these trees on the property and none of that is able to dry because there's a lot of shade and moisture, it's going to stay a dank mess under there, and all that moisture is going to sit under his foundation and just breed up, and you'll just smell that I don't know if you've ever, you know, if you go into a house that's got a dirt crawl space. I have a really old house, so I'll smell on one side of the house is built in the 1700s, so it's got a dirt space. And you, even if you go in and there's no mold, if there's a lot of moisture on that ground, it smells musty and nasty and dank and like damp earth. So people do a lot of different things. You can put a vapor barrier down to protect that area. Some people opt to put a plastic barrier with stone, polyethylene, or you know whatever product you want to use to kind of keep that moisture from breeding up into the home and breeding up into the crawl space. You can make the crawl, and then some people choose to make the crawl space part of the environment, so part of the house, seal off the ventilation, and then treat it like it's an actual airspace. That's one philosophy contractors use. The other option is you can put the vapor barrier down and the rocks and keep that damp earth from you know breeding up, but keep the space ventilated. I'm in the camp. There's like different camps for different things, but I'm under the camp that I like to ventilate. So I, you know, a house that's ventilating to me is much better. So he could always put a vapor barrier down to prevent that earth smell and any of the stuff, you know, the microbiologicals that are sort of under in the earth from coming up into his space. But, you know, from what it sounds like, he's got a really damp environment naturally on the outside of his home, which is going to sort of make its way interior because of the way that, you know, water vapor works.
Right, exactly. Thomas, does that answer some questions for you?
Well, some of them. I have a whole long list. It'd take hours.
But if it were me, I can only give you the advice that I would give if it were me, and I would clear my lot. I'd have a lot of, like, allow sunlight to come in and really dry out that environment. You can choose to put a vapor barrier down to protect the, you know, to keep that dank earth smell from coming up into the house. I'd make sure there was no mold in that crawl space. You know, I'd check all the beams. I would not keep insulation product under there. Like, a lot of crawl spaces can be insulated, and unfortunately, that insulation can turn moldy. So I would probably remove that and try to keep it as dry as possible. And if you wanted to close it off to the outside, you could put a dehumidifier in there and dehumidify the crawl space as well.
Well, how do you clean specific rooms in a house? Is that necessary to clean the walls and that kind of thing?
Well, you know, you have to find out if you really, you know, again, how what types of mold you had, what the levels were, and where the source is. I mean, the first thing with mold remediation is you got to determine where your source is coming from, because there's always a source. So whether that be the crawl space, maybe you have some older bathrooms. You know, bathrooms that get over 25 years old will just naturally grow mold. Every house has them. I mean, I test homes all over the country, and, you know, there's a normal percentage of molds that you'll have, and then there's what's called the unnormal percentage. So, some things are natural. Most houses across this country, if your bathroom is, you know, getting up there in age, 20 years old, it needs to be redone because we weren't meant to bring water sources in. And what happens is, as you tub and shower and bathroom and toilet sweats and all this stuff, you know, eventually your plywood rots out underneath of your bathroom. And it's just from natural wear and tear. Sue, you know, it's just normal stuff, and everybody has to redo their bathrooms. And you can tell when you sample, you know, homes, I see patterns. I can see when bathrooms are starting to get older. We'll see a lot of Aspergillus penicillium show up. And, you know, then you start to say, okay, well, you got a couple years. This level's not really high, but you can tell that the bathroom's starting to age. So I usually tell clients every 20 to 25 years, you really need to redo your bathrooms.
Absolutely.
So you got to find out your source.
Yes.
The source is really key, because you don't want to just run around cleaning everything, because you don't need to. You need to find out where the source is, where it's located, and then remove the mold from there, and then you can do a thorough cleaning. I mean, it doesn't hurt to wipe your walls down every year or so anyway. Everybody should, because we get particulate pollution, you know, petrochemicals, all these things from daily living get on the walls. You know, the older generation, Sue and I talk about this, they were much more thorough. They'd wipe their walls down every spring. My grandmother would come in, you know, with a little bit of vinegar and water and wipe the walls down. And you're supposed to be doing that, or, you know, you can paint. Painting works as well, too. But if you don't want to get into, you know, chemicals, then it's better just to use some vinegar and water. But that's just a normal maintenance thing anyway. You should do that every, you know, year or two anyway to help just keep down the chemicals that sort of accumulate.
Yes, and it makes the house smell so good. I just love that. Any other questions, Thomas?
I'll quit for now, Sue. I'll give up.
Okay, all right.
Thank you.
All right. Well, you know, this has been interesting because, you know, you mentioned cleaning walls and stuff, and I do that twice a year.
Right.
It just, we grew up like that. Yeah, spring and fall cleaning, you betcha. Well, what
it's
we,
so
you
important.
Mentioned,
it's really important.
It is important, you know, just to get the junk that, you know, you've got so much that you're bombarded with. And, gosh, you just got to get it off your walls. I mean, I clean my carpets every other week. I know that's probably obsessive, but it's just, you know, we live in sandy area, so sand gets in, and, you know, we have the pets and in and out of the, you know, the house and stuff. And just, to me, it's just grimy, so if I do it like that. But you mentioned bugs, and you and I talked about roaches and mites, I think. Tell me how we get those and how do we get rid of those?
Well, the biggest thing, again, is this, you know, and back to his questions, if I can just kind of reiterate, I think people should be testing their houses for mold every 3 to 5 years, okay? And then you need to know what's normal for your home, what's abnormal, what types of molds you have. Obviously, if you have toxic molds, they should be removed. If you have levels of what we call typical mold, that if they're out of whack with everything else and they're definitely higher and they're elevated because of things, these things all have to be corrected. Dehumidification is the number one way to help deter mold. It doesn't mean that it can't form, but what it does is it helps longevity. Like, so for example, if you have a finished basement I live in the tri-state area in New Jersey. So if you have if you've got a finished basement, what this dehumidification is going to do is it's going to lengthen the time that you don't have to start remodeling your basement. You know, you finish a basement in 20 years, you're going to have a moldy basement just from moisture that's constantly, you know, seeping up in a vapor from the difference in temperature between your ground and your house. So what dehumidification does is it lengthens the time that you're going to be able to not have to remodel as frequently. It keeps that drier, so you're not going to be having all the moisture issues that contribute to mold and bugs. So getting to bugs, all of these things love moisture, you know, spiders, silverfish, cockroach, mites, all of it. You know, we see at certain times of the year when, you know, mice come in and you start having high relative humidity, people have a mouse infestation, they'll see higher mite levels because of the fact that, you know, this moisture allows things to proliferate. Moisture is, if I give you food, I give you water, and I give you air, you're going to do great. So molds are the same way. They need, you know, the same environment. It's like, so you put water down there and you give them some drywall and some books or whatever, and it's like, okay, I'm going to live here and I'm going to like it. So we're trying to cut off as many food sources as we can to keep these, you know, rodents and mites and you know, molds and bacteria from coming in.
Right. Absolutely. I like that idea, cut off the source. What's the number one thing you find in homes across the country?
As far as like an issue, like you know, something wrong, or just in general?
Yeah.
You know, there's so many things that, you know, you talk about lead, you talk about radon, you talk about mold, you talk about volatile organics. You know, I think mold is definitely a major issue. That's why I think everyone should be testing every 3 to 5 years. I think VOCs are a hidden issue. I think we don't understand them as much. I think that they are a major contributor to health effects that we don't really understand yet. And I think we're starting to encourage people to test for VOCs. Just, you know, an example, I like to give examples. You know, in Canada, there was a big study that came out, and they were talking about the latest cancer threat of homeowners who have attached garages. So, you know, most people, for convenience factors, we started building homes and building envelopes with an attached garage. Well, to me, this was one of the worst things you could do because we started to incorporate all of the things we store in a garage. So, like, for example, what would you store in your garage, Sue?
Probably gasoline and old tires. I don't know. I'm guessing.
Right. Okay. So petroleum-based product, things that produce benzene, which has been linked to, obviously, leukemia. So what Canada warned about was basically saying that there was enough of the chemical benzene found in car exhaust seeping into homes. So when someone decided that they were going to start up their engine in their car, they found that it could heighten the danger risks of contracting leukemia. Okay, so my concern is, all right, and another expert may argue, well, you know, just from starting up your car, it's not going to really give you a high enough level of benzene that this could contribute to leukemia. This is what, you know, another expert would argue. My argument is, okay, I can buy into that, but my concern is, all right, the attached garage, that's giving you benzene. You're starting your car in there every day. You're storing gasoline. Maybe you're storing a snowblower. Maybe you're storing power equipment tools, whatever it is, right, Sue? So you've got your benzene source there. Okay, well, let's go and talk about dryer vents, because another study came out, right? The University of Washington basically said scented laundry products emit hazardous chemicals through dryer vents. They did a study where they captured 25 volatile organic compounds from people's dryer vents. So from using all kinds of laundry detergent and dry, you know, your fabric softener, they were collecting chemicals, formaldehyde-based chemicals, benzenes, all coming out of the dryer vent and your laundry. Now, okay, so maybe the benzene in the garage isn't enough to give you leukemia, but now you're adding another source of benzene, which is your dryer and your laundry. And then maybe you're using Glade plug-in air fresheners. Maybe those contain benzene. So my concern here is that they're just looking at one thing, saying that it could be a hazard. Well, how about all the other sources of benzene that we have in a house in a typical day? How does that contribute to how we're feeling? You see what I'm saying? So my concern is, look at all these different things we're doing that are emitting benzene. Nobody's taking that into consideration. They're looking at one thing and saying, just that's enough to be a concern. You know, Canada's saying, okay, attached garage is a concern. Well, now we're adding in all these other things, and that's my biggest message, if I can get that out, is that, look, we've got to combine all these things because we don't – a house is one unit. And it contains different sources of these things from, you know, all these different things that are in your home. And then that contributes to your overall level, and that's where it becomes a concern.
Oh, absolutely. I stopped using dryer towels. I never did use the Glade plug-ins. But we stopped using dryer towels and anything that wasn't organic in the house. And they actually sell laundry detergent that is organic.
Or vegetable-based, what you want to do is get away from petroleum-based products. You know, your traditional laundry detergents all contain petroleum. Even if you are using a scent-free, okay, you're still not using a vegetable-based detergent. And my argument is that, look, if you change to a vegetable-based detergent, you're not only helping the environment, you know, this stuff isn't going out and polluting the environment, it's helping contribute to that, and you're also making your home and your body healthier. I mean, to me, it's a win-win. Like, I don't understand why they sell petroleum-based laundry detergent. It doesn't even make sense. I mean, if you can make a laundry detergent that's vegetable-based, okay, well, you know, we know it's a hazard on the environment. We're testing air quality coming out of our dryer vents and seeing that 25 volatile organics are contributing to, you know, an unsafe exposure level. And then on top of that, we're adding they were saying that the emissions from the laundry detergent would be equivalent to 3% of the total emissions coming from automobiles. So basically, just from us using our dryers, we're contributing to global warming. We're contributing to a poor environment. So to me, it's just like a no-brainer. Okay, well, let's just, I mean, require people to not use, you know, these types of laundry detergents and use things that are more acceptable to an environment, and it's a win-win for everybody. Is anybody really going to care whether they're using a vegetable-based detergent versus something that has, you know, more chemicals in it? I don't think so.
No.
And we're improving the environment.
Right. You ask why, and it's money. It always has to boil down to money. They can get by with it, and they will do it. Doesn't matter. They don't care. But you and I had another interesting conversation. I don't know why interesting seems to be a hard word for me today, but it was about hoarding. And I've actually talked to a few people. There's a show on, or it used to be on, it was called Hoarders or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched
so long,
probably 5 minutes or less of that, and made me nauseous. So why is hoarding or clutter a bad thing to have in your home?
Well, I mean, obviously you can't clean around it, and it becomes a source of, you know, if you've got books and all kinds of things piled up, you're going to increase your dust mites. You're going to increase, you know, any type of fecal matter that comes from any kind of rodent or bug. You're not going to be able to clean that, right? Then you've got you know, books and things pushed up against walls where you're getting water vapor behind them, and then you start to grow mold because you don't even know what's there. You can't see if you have leaks or if you have a plumbing issue because these people have extensive amounts of clutter all over their environment. And unfortunately, you know, people, this is all learned behavior. It, you know, if someone grows up in a home where people have a lot of clutter, and you know, my grandmother was a person who, you know, went through World War II and, you know, was held on to things. You know, certain people held on to things because they didn't have a lot. You know, they went through, you know, different times in their life where they had to be more frugal. So people get in these ways of operating and thinking, and they start to accumulate all kinds of things, and they don't want to part with things. And my philosophy is, look, if you haven't used something in 5 years, maybe it's time to assess whether or not it's time for it to go. Because when you have all this clutter in your home, it really promotes for an unhealthy living environment, increases your dander, which can, you know, exacerbate things like asthma, COPD. If you have a lot of dander, people, we shed skin cells just like animals do. Animals always get blamed, but people do too. We're more hyperallergenic. We're not cause as many allergies, but dander is dander, and when it builds up, dust mites feed on it. So it's really important to not be able to clean and use a HEPA vacuum and be HEPA vacuuming, you know, as much as you can, or using HEPA filters to try to keep that dander down. There's a lot of great studies out now that have been done that have really shown that using HEPA filters will help increase and improve cardiovascular function. The American Thoracic Society, the American Journal of Respiratory and Critical Care Medicine, did a study on HEPA filters, and they found that they reduce airborne particulate matter, and this results in improved blood vessel health and reductions in blood markers that are associated with an increased risk of cardiovascular disease. And there's been a couple studies that have done, some in Sweden, some in British Columbia, and they're showing that, especially people over the age of 65, if we can help use HEPA filters to reduce airborne particulate, dander, dust, you know, things that fly through the air, pollution, we can actually improve our cardiovascular function. And to me, I mean, I'd rather, much rather do that first than take a pill that's going to help with, you know, or take a medication. Let's try to do the natural things first. And the people over age 65, you know, when your immune system starts to become compromised because you're older, saw the most improvement. And I think that this is really important. When you start to go over 65, you need to keep things cleaner, and you need to use HEPA filtration as much as possible. And the other thing, too, is, you know, when you get older, that's when you start getting tired, right? Like when you're young, you feel like, okay, I can clean, I can run around, I can do these things. But as people age, they get tired, and they don't keep up with their property, and things are, it's harder to do things. So it's really important that actually people over the age of 65 are really in good environments, and that they're using these HEPA filters as much as possible.
Well, absolutely. I totally agree. I've had a few years, not many, but before I hit 65. But hopefully I can still clean because it's my favorite thing to do. Okay, we were talking about, garages and things like that. Is there anything that we can do to safely store some of this stuff that we're keeping in our garages so that it's not going to cause problems?
Yeah, I mean, I prefer you keep stuff out in the shed. You know, people who have the property can store things in a shed and keep them away from the house, especially gasoline, gas-powered equipment. I have an attached garage, and I no longer keep my car in it. I don't keep gas in the house. I keep all that in the shed. Paints are a really big concern. Volatile organics, once you crack a paint can, for example, people think, oh, it's sealed. It's not, unfortunately, and it leaks out. So if you're storing 8, 9, you know, cans of paint, those volatile organic levels go really, really high. And, you know, a lot of people, I've seen my clients do remediation or do renovation, excuse me, and they'll bring in, you know, they're going to have a baby, right? So they're going to do some renovation. They bring in all kinds of paint, and then they say, well, I'm going to, you know, I want to keep the paint. I mean, I'm guilty of this too, right? Paint's expensive, $50 a gallon for a can of paint, especially if you're buying, you know, a low VOC paint, is expensive, and then you want to hold on to it. And so they do renovation in a baby's room or whatnot, and then they store the paints in the basement, and they bring the infant home. And I've tested volatile organic levels that are, you know, 2,000, 3,000 in a baby's room of a new infant. So, you know, those things are not good. And to me, they have to be addressed. And, you know, like I like to see a typical house, a total vault organic number about 500 or less. Ideally around 250 would be, you know, ideal. And it's definitely a feasible number. It's not something that's, you know, I have homes all the time that are within that range. But you have to really watch what you're storing in the house. You know, paints, gas, power equipment, you want that stuff outside. Unfortunately, paints don't last well. If you do want to save a can of paint, I suggest putting it in like some kind of metal bin would be better so that the volatiles don't mix with plastic bins. If you can seal it in a metal bin, that would at least, you know, be helpful. You know, you want to watch the types of, you know, if you have a lot of petroleum-based products, you don't want to store things like WD-40 and you know, oil products and, you know, automotive products. And, you know, try to keep that stuff out in a shed that's not attached to your home.
Right. And you know, a lot of people store a lot of junk underneath their kitchen sink.
Mm-hmm.
They really put lots of, you know, and we don't, you know, a lot of people don't watch what they use to clean with. So they've got, you know, well, I'm going to put my Armor All on there, you know, because that's good. Or I'm going to put my WD-40 because I may need to, you know, get a joint on a door or something, you know. And so they store all this stuff underneath their kitchen sink. How harmful is this?
Well, you're contributing to these VOC levels. Like when we study and take samples in people's homes of total volatile organic numbers, we can tell, you know, how much of the stuff's coming from paints, how much is it coming from solvents, cleaners, pesticides, whatever it is. So if you're storing all that, and you're, especially if you're, you know, a husband or a wife that does a lot of cooking, you're breathing that in all the time, that the kids are breathing it in, it's no good. And, you know, to me, it's so easy to find products that don't outgas or that are, you know, greener products. I mean, it's really, there's so many great, you know, years ago we didn't have these options, but there's so many wonderful companies out there. I mean, at our company alone, we represent a lot of different companies. We have a whole line of natural products from grout cleaner to, you know, laundry detergent. So, I mean, there's just so many options now for safer, you know, non-fragranced products. And, you know, what I do want to reiterate is just because something's green doesn't necessarily make it healthy. So if you have natural products, some people will buy a lot of products that have lavender or citrus, which is D-lamine, which is the compound that is, you know, the volatile organic that comes from oranges. Turpentine actually comes from pine, which is a natural derivative, is derived from something natural, but it's not healthy. Things that are aromatic, that are green, can also contribute to that total volatile organic number. So just because something's natural, you really want to watch what you're using. You want to stay away from fragrance things. You really want to go to non-fragrance because those fragrances are all contributing to your VOC level, whether it be pine or citrus or when you bring Christmas trees into the house, that all increases your volatile level. And what we find is that people who increase their VOCs, if you have an immune-compromised situation, you know, whether it be Lyme disease, fibromyalgia, asthma, allergies, you know, whatever it is, that TVOC number affects people who are chronically ill. So the lower we can make that TVOC number, the better people feel, especially with multiple chemical sensitivity. It's a huge thing that if you drop that TVOC number, the symptoms that they experience are less. That's why a lot of people will go and live, you know, out in these environments where they don't have a lot of, they feel better where they don't have a lot of things in the home. It's because that TVOC level is lower. And people, you know, were really studying that volatile organic compounds. You know, they're semi-volatiles, which could be things like endocrine mimickers. And then there's what we call the regular volatile organic. So there's different types of volatiles. But in general, you want to keep that number very low, especially if you have a chronic condition, because it's going to really help you.
Absolutely. I totally agree with this. Everything that we put, you know, we talk so much about everything we put on our body, you know, like, you know, hair products or skin products or whatever, and people don't realize that that goes right into their bloodstream, but yet we live in homes that have even more toxins, which go through our skin, in our sinuses, everywhere, and that's contributing as well, so we do have to watch that. Let's talk, if we can, about radon. We never have talked about that on this show. What is it, and how do we test for it, and do you have a way to get rid of it?
Yeah, well, radon is an odorless gas that, you know, we never really see. It's not something that people can see or smell. And it's odorless, it's tasteless, and basically it's invisible radioactive gas that seeps into the house, you know, around cracks in the foundation or basements, and it gets into the air. And what's interesting about radon is it's in almost every state. I think every state in the U.S. has radon now. I don't think there's any state that's exempt from it. So it's a serious thing. It's also the second leading cause of lung cancer in the U.S., which makes it, you know, even more important that you test for it regularly. And I don't know about your state. Are you required to test for radon in Florida when you buy a home?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, I don't know if they're all the same as far as state by state. Like in New Jersey, we have to. I think it varies from, you know, where you live. But typically what happens is that people test, you know, when they buy a home, and then they never test again. And then what happens is that over time you get cracks in the foundation of a home, the house settles, right? Then you have deteriorating weather stripping, or you have maybe you had a mitigation system put in, you had radon, and they put it in, and the mitigation system isn't working properly, or you have mechanical failure and you don't know it, or maybe you decided to do renovation and you put new windows in and siding and roofing, and you made your house more energy efficient, which made it more airtight. All of these things can change your radon level. So just because you bought a house at a certain time and you had less than 4 picocuries, which is, you know, what you look for in a house to make sure that it's you know, not at a dangerous level, people make changes along the way, and then they don't test for radon. So I think it's really important. I just did my house 2 months ago. I just did a radon test. Just you go down to, you know, a local hardware store, pick up one of the radon kits. You can do it yourself, and, you know, do it and put it out for, like, usually about 96 hours, I think, for a short-term test. And then just, you know, get your levels and see where you are. You know, you want to be below 4 picocuries, but, you know, in 2009, the World Health Organization sort of determined that a dangerous level was considerably lower at, like, around the 2.7. So, you know, if you come back with an elevated level, you might want to have it checked by a mitigator or whatnot. But it's an easy test to do. You should do it every 3 to 5 years, and especially if you've done any type of renovation, especially closing up your building envelope. You know, energy efficiency has become so important, but we need to ventilate when we do that. And when we tighten that building envelope to the point that it becomes a, you know, sealed so tight, all these things, whether it's volatile organics, mold, radon, they all become trapped in the home, and the levels get exceedingly higher when we see people put on, you know, vinyl siding over wood, or a natural, you know, if you have a cement home, a brick home, whatever. Natural products breathe, and they allow airflow. But when you put plastic over them, you make them so tight that they don't breathe well. So
absolutely.
You kind of you make your home more polluted,
yeah,
by, you know, doing this.
Right. What are the signs of radon poisoning? Do you know?
Well, I mean, typically it's not something that people experience, but I have known cases, not personally, but that other doctors have brought to my attention, where people actually were, they were having symptoms to it, and they weren't feeling well. I think it was more like a general malaise and, you know, type of chronic thing. But what was happening is it can come out, especially if you have a well system, the radon will find its way up through your water supply. So it's really important to check your water, too. And when you do a standard water test, everyone should check their water every 3 to 5 years, too. And when you have a water test done, you can actually do a radon or a, you know, a radiological test that will look at radon coming out of the water, because you get a percentage that will follow up the pipes. You know, it's airborne, so it's going to come up through your pipes, and then when you turn on the faucet, it comes out. So a couple, they were showering, and basically, you know, they had like a small bedroom area with a shower in it, and I guess enough, they were getting high levels naturally in the home, and then from showering every day in the shower, they were getting an extreme amount coming out, and they actually were feeling not well. But, you know, that's really atypical. Most people don't even know they're exposed to it and don't have any symptoms, and then they develop cancer. So that's why it's really important to check it, because it's atypical to have symptoms. But, you know, if you're having any strange symptoms in your house and you're not sure if you have radon or not, it's a really easy test to do. And, you know, you can just pick up a, you know, there's a couple great laboratories online that you can go to and just, you know, order a test kit.
Yes, absolutely. And it is. I mean, we should take care of our homes just the same as we take care of our health. And I think that that's important. What about other toxins? I mean, we've talked about radon, we've talked about bugs, we've talked about mold. Are there any other toxins that we should be aware of?
Well, I mean, there's lots of things in the house, I mean, that can go wrong, right? So you've got your issues with lead. You know, lead is one issue. You've got things like radon. You have to check your water to make sure, especially if you have a well system, you know, where you're actually, you know, and whether or not you have a well or not, city water can become contaminated too, you know, as it, because it leaves location A from a city pump and it's been treated, doesn't mean that you're ending up with the same water at your house like 3 miles down the road. So, all, you know, water needs to be checked for all kinds of radiologicals. And then, of course, when they treat water, they use a lot of chemicals and contaminants that, you know, basically end up in your water from just the treatment of it. So a lot of people want to check to make sure that they're not, you know, being made sick from leftover chemicals that, you know, from chlorine and everything else. And then you've got, you know, of course, bacteria issues and pH issues and all things with water. You know, you've got issues in the house pertaining to combustibles. We all have heat. Some of us have electric, which, you know, can be EMF issues. Some of us have petroleum-based products like diesel fuel or gas. Those things can leak. You can have issues with carbon monoxide, slow leaks that, you know, people think, oh, I have a carbon monoxide detector, but you can have a slow leak and never even, your carbon monoxide detector will never go off. Those are designed for major situations where somebody, you know, high level of exposure that can cause death and instantaneous problems. But if you have a low-level carbon monoxide leak, that can also make you very sick and chemically sensitive and cause all kinds of issues too. So it's important to have, you know, your furnaces serviced. We have all kinds of combustibles and things that can cause health issues. Then, you know, you talk about your volatile organics. Those are things like benzene and toluene and formaldehydes and, I mean, you name it, PERC, which is your, you know, dry cleaning materials. We bring a lot of stuff into the home every day that can contribute to, you know, all kinds of health effects. And, I mean, that list can go on and on and on and on. I mean, there's lots of chemicals that we're bringing in that, you know, just from, you know, personal care products and, you know, your septic system has sulfur dioxide. If you have septic leak, that can make you sick. If you have open drains and traps in your home, you know, drains and traps that you're not using can make you sick. I mean, it really is a home has so many potential things that can go wrong, Sue. And I don't say this to scare people. This isn't like a scare tactic. It's education. When you become educated about what can go wrong in your home and what you should be doing, you can understand where people can come down with all kinds of health ailments just because they're not taking care of their house. And most people don't know how to take care of their house. That's why I'm in business. That's why I'm here. That my job is to educate people about looking for leaks in your attic, looking for flashing problems, looking for septic issues. Do you have a, are your vents, you know, every bathroom has a vent that goes up through your roof. Are those cleared out? Do you have leaf, you know, leaf piling up in your gutters that are preventing water from actually draining? Do you have gutter guards that aren't working properly? Do you have ice damming that's occurring that's backing water up? I mean, there's so many things that can go wrong. And people don't understand the importance of really maintaining a home. And, you know, a lot of people, and this isn't a stereotype, it's that people are like, oh, my gosh, I'm worried about the type of couch that I have, or I want my house to be beautifully decorated. And that's all important. But if you're not servicing and maintaining your building envelope and your home properly, all of that doesn't matter because what you're basically creating is a time bomb. And you're basically looking, you know, you have problems. And people spend money, and this is just my opinion, okay, they spend money on things that may not necessarily be helping to help their house. You know, sometimes you have to replace your siding or you have to do major renovations to building envelopes, things that aren't fun. I call them they're not the cosmetic things, right, that people like to do to beautify their house. They're not putting in a swimming pool or getting new couches or finishing your basement. They're structural issues. But if you don't maintain them, you really can set yourself up for some major health concerns.
Oh, absolutely. So when you go into a home, say it's a one-story, and because I've been to Thomas's house, so say it's a one-story and it has the dirt subfloor. And so how long would it take to actually inspect the grounds and the home?
Well, I mean, doing visual inspection is great because you're looking for specific things, you're using your nose, you're kind of smelling, but majority of the time, you know, I determine and get most of my information when I test. So the first thing, like in his house, there's no question. I mean, I believe he had it tested by Metrometrics, which is a really good lab. I mean, it's an excellent lab. I think they do the ERMI test there, and the ERMI, which is, you know, what Dr. Shoemaker talks about a lot. And ERMI's weird because it really, to me, it hasn't really taken off the way that it should. There's only a couple labs that do it. But each type of mold testing, whether it be ERMI or if you're doing a standard air sample, they all have their importance. You know, I think it just depends what you're looking for. So I found that, you know, when I researched a lot of the different types, I found that they all had pluses and minuses. And, you know, as long as people are investigating. So in his case, he needs to have his sampling done. He needs to specifically know what types of mold he has, and he needs to know sources. So where is this coming from? It's always a source, whether it's the crawl space or it's his bathroom, and then he needs to remediate it and fix it so he doesn't have mold problem there anymore. And that's going to help. You know, it's not something to be scared of. People go, oh, my God, I got to move out of my house. And I maybe because I work around it so much and I'm so familiar with it, it doesn't – you don't want to be frightened by it, but you want to make changes. Like, so say you have – so you've got a bunch of sources in your home that are mold, right? You've got maybe a leak somewhere, and then you've got some moldy basement, and then you have, you know, homes are like, they're just notoriously, they can start leaking. Like, pipe can break, you know, especially with this winter weather we've had in the Northeast. I mean, and especially in the South, too, because they got that cold weather, and they weren't prepared for it. So, you know, my dad has a home in Delaware, right? And he had broken pipes because he was keeping the heat down in certain parts of the house, and you're not used to getting those cold temperatures, and the pipes froze. So this happens all the time. But what I'm saying is you want to look at the house like a picture, and you want to start fixing things. And every health improvement that you make to reduce mold is going to help you. So if you've got a moldy basement, you take care of that. Whether or not you have a leak under your sink, you're still working towards the good. You're reducing that amount, getting less and less. And that's only going to help your body. It's not going to hurt you. So you have to start cleaning these things up, and it's overwhelming, and you want to start one spot at a time. Because people can't all go and just, you know, rip apart their whole house and say, and afford to be able to do this. So what you really want to do is start making improvements to the house gradually over time to make it a better space.
Oh, absolutely. What, and somebody asked this earlier when they knew you were going to be on, what is the charge for you to come and inspect their home?
Well, I'm in the tri-state area, so if I'm going out to a location in the tri-state area, this is the area that I'll cover. But we sell kits all over the country and, you know, internationally. So if people want to test their homes from any location, they can, whether they're in California. We don't do on-site visit there, obviously. So, but we have recommendations of other certified mold remediators and certified indoor environmentalists and indoor air quality specialists in that area because of the networks that I'm in. So we can refer you to somebody really good there who can handle it. But, you know, doctors send their patients to us from all over the country, and we test homes to find out what the problems are, and then we make recommendations. So a standard test, like if you're going to do a mold test or a VOC test, it's somewhere around $400. And then if you do a consult, depending on how much time you spend, it's usually about $100, give or take, to go over your results and tell you what you need. And we're always on call to help you make those decisions. I mean, a lot of the time it's just telling you, okay, you need to do this, this, or this. And then you have to hire a contractor in your area or whoever you feel comfortable doing whatever you need to do. I think the hardest thing sometimes is finding a contractor that will work with you, especially if you have chemical sensitivity or allergies or asthma, you know, because contractors want to do things quick and they want to do things most economical. So when you hire somebody to come into your house, they're not going to sit there and assess what types of products they're putting in. They're just going to do the job and get it done, and what's the cheapest way to do it. And unfortunately, when you're working with a house, I mean, you can either contact someone like me, and they'll just make those decisions for you. Here's your choices. This is what I would pick. Here, boom. Or you can do the research yourself, but it's time-consuming. But either way, you know, you can't just rely on a contractor to just do the job necessarily if you're concerned about what's going into your home and you want to have a green and healthy house. You have to kind of, you know, do the research. But, you know, it's stuff that's doable. But it's education. Like, my job is to educate you on, look, you can put products in that will really make you sick. There's no question. I mean, people paint all the time. They do construction, and they turn around, and they have sick building syndrome. This is not something that's uncommon. So, you know, you want to make better choices about the products you put in. When I redid my bathroom, you know, I used green drywall. I used paper tape. I used caulk that had no VOC, no odor, and I was really careful about what I used. You know, I used quartz countertop, and I tried to stay away from anything that had radioactivity to it. You know, so, and you don't have to go to that extreme, but you can, there's a lot of things you can do to really do a, you know, do a project or do a renovation that's not going to be so toxic for you, especially if you have kids, you have young children, you have people in the home who have autoimmune problems. You don't want to be afraid to do renovations because every house is going to need them, but you can do them in a greener way, healthier way.
Oh, absolutely. And I like the idea about taking a small project at a time because it is costly. But
it, it,
I, you
it
know,
is,
I
and
like...
people, you know, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. Okay, go ahead.
There's people in this, you know, in my arena who are like, okay, you can't have any mold in your house, you know, and they panic people, and you've got to be realistic. I mean, we're not all Rockefeller, right? We can't go tear down our house and then redo the whole thing. It doesn't work that way. I mean, unfortunately, that'd be great if we could all do that, but money is important and economics are important, and we all have, you know, kids in school or expenses or mortgage or car payments or whatever, doctor's bills. So what I'm saying is don't be afraid to do projects. Do them. Every project that you do, view your house as like an overall goal, right? And slowly make these improvements, you know, whether it's putting in a new furnace or having the roof done. You know, paying attention to your roof is really important because that's where the majority of the water leaks come from. So you really want to pay attention to your roof, make sure it's up to date. You know, make sure that all the flashing and everything, you know, you've got a lot of things that go up through your roof, whether that be your chimney, fireplace, septic pipes, fans, bathroom fans, exhaust fans, whatever it is. And those all have flashing around them. And if those things aren't properly flashed or that they become, you know, they get cracks over time, and if you have them sealed with a caulk or whatever, it breaks down, you know, you start to get leaks. So it's really important to pay attention to the top of your house. To me, the roof and what goes into it, and then the bottom, your basement area. Those are the key areas I like to focus on in a house when I'm looking at a house or looking, assessing problems, because that's where you're going to get most of your water intrusion, which is, you know, can contribute to a lot of different things.
Absolutely. I'm picturing a house as a sandwich, you know, with the roof and the basement and everything between it's where you live. Yeah, that's kind of nifty. Well, let's give everybody your website and how to contact you.
Okay, well, the easiest way to contact us is we have two websites. One is myhealthyhome.info, or the easier one to contact me is healthyhomeexpert.com. So either one will take us, one is to the business and one is to our services. But there's a lot of great information on there. I mean, I've done a lot of radio programs and education and all kinds of magazines nationally and media, and, you know, my job and why I do what I do and what I like what I do is that I really want to get people educated about their homes, about what it means to have a home, and about all the things that can go wrong in a home that you need to be conscious of that can contribute to your health. And to me, you and I had this discussion, what you put into your body, you know, your DNA, of course, your history is very important. You talked about, you know, your spirituality and where you are, your thinking, right, is really important, and then your environment.
Right.
And if those things are working optimally, you're going to be healthy. But, you know, if something goes awry in one of these areas, you can really, not do well quickly. I mean, to me, I think environment is a bigger component than we recognize, or I wouldn't be doing this. I think that it gets shoved under the carpet, and I can't understand why, but, you know, when you go to a doctor, they're just looking at things wrong in the body and what tests will prove that it's wrong, but they're not looking at the source. And the environmental component just gets left out. It's just really, it's disheartening because I think it's a bigger contributor. You know, I mean, we know that pets carry disease. We know that when your dogs and cats run around outside, they run around in Enterobacter and E. coli. I mean, these things aren't coincidental, right? So they're rolling around outside. Then your dog or pet comes in. You may be immune suppressed, or maybe you have someone in the house that's older. You pet the dog. Oh, nice dog. Love you, love you. And then you touch your food, and then you eat your food. So, we ingest these things. I mean, this is common sense. You know, people pet their dogs, your dog's running around outside, you need to wash your hands, you need to take precautions. Animal and pet dander is a very big concern to me. You and I discussed it. Even though you're a pet lover And I am a pet lover. I realize that if you're going to have them in your house, there's a lot of things you need to do to really watch the amount of proteins. I think I explained to you, I had a client in Los Angeles who actually had someone coming to his house frequently to work in the home, and she had horses, and she was bringing over an extreme amount of horse protein. He was not feeling well, so we did a dander count. His dander count in his bedroom came back, and then I wanted to do a little more analysis, so we analyzed it for cat, dog, and horse protein, and the reason I chose the horse was because she had horses. And the lab was shocked. I mean, they were like, my God, this level of horse protein is off the charts. Like, what is this man? Does he have horses? And it was just coming over on her clothing. There was no other source of horse. She was bringing it over, and it was contributing to him not feeling well. And, you know, these proteins stick around. They're kind of like sticky balls. So if you have a pet, these proteins will stick to everything, and they're not easy to remove. So if you have people in the house who are immune suppressed or have asthma, allergy conditions, or even if they don't, they can basically develop them because of the amounts of protein. So if you're not cleaning properly, you're not painting, you've got carpet, things are all, you know, you got ducts that need to be cleaned, and all this stuff is just, you know, accumulating, you're going to get sick.
Oh, absolutely. I totally agree. And we have to be very vigilant. You know, a lot of people I talk to, oh, they're eating organic, and they've gone to natural health, hair care products and personal hygiene products, but I've not heard one of them mention their home, not
right.
One. And it's like, yeah. It's amazing. Yeah, I'm almost afraid to ask people how they live, though.
Yeah. And you and I had this discussion. We had this very candid discussion about people don't know that they're doing anything wrong. It's not like if your doctor says to you, okay, do you live clean? What are you going to tell him? No, I'm a pig. I don't live. You don't know. In your mind, you think you're living clean. I don't think that if somebody's a hoarder that they recognize the fact that they're a hoarder. It's not. They don't know. It's like, what do you have to compare it to? If that's what you're used to your environment being, you don't know it any other way, Sue. You know, so
yep.
I go into houses all the time, every day, and when I tell you people do not live cleanly, it is a across-the-board scenario. This is people
right.
smoking, people having laundry detergent. I mean, you'd walk into a house, the first thing you smell, laundry detergent, perfume, Glade air fresheners, plug-ins, Pledge cleaner, Clorox wipes, you know, you name it. You know, all these personal care products that people are using. And it's fine, you're using one or two of these items, but they're using 50 items, okay? And their house is like you walk in and it's like a perfume bath. Everything's coated in these things. And unfortunately, when you're talking about what we call semi-volatiles, these are very interesting things. Like endocrine disruptors or chemicals that disrupt the endocrine system typically are what we call the semi-volatiles. And basically when they release, you know, these compounds, we find them in around the original product, so whatever it was that was a semi-volatile, we'll find it in the air around the product. Then we'll find it condensed on indoor surfaces, and we can see it in house dust. So say you have a product that's producing a semi-volatile, right, which is it'll end up in all these things, and then you're getting these low-dose effects of endocrine disruptors all the time. So, you know, these things we talk about, you hear people talk about flame retardants, detergents, plastic bottles, cosmetics, blah, blah, blah. This is what happens. The stuff doesn't just stay in one particular area. Then it starts to absorb into other things. And then, of course, you know, we have these issues with people having health effects. So, you know, people,
yeah.
I go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you're on a roll.
So, you know, if you walk into these houses like I do every day or I see people's environments, I mean, you'd be shocked because people don't live healthy. They don't know how. That's my job. So my job is to educate you. And even if a lot of people, like you, say you walk into a really nice house, say the people just purchase this brand new home, right? It's beautiful. You know, then they've got all the issues of all the new construction, right? They've got their volatile organics, new carpeting, you know, plywood, pressure-treated lumber, oriented strand board. So here they're like, they may be thinking they're doing the right thing by buying this, like, house, you know, then they got final siding and Tyvek, and they're sealed up, and they're not ventilated properly, and, you know, they've got all kinds of, chemicals outgassing into the environment. So that's a whole other issue. So it's very rare that I walk into a home that's really healthy. I think that it's just the problem with the way we build in general. I think that's why this industry of sustainable building is so important. I think green building is just so needed that we need to really start investigating how to build healthy homes. And, you know, there's groups out there that, are, you know, are doing it, but there's just not enough studies. You know, the National Center for Healthy Housing, you know, has a lot of information and guidelines, but this stuff's old. You know, we really need to be doing more studies that are you know, telling us, well, okay, well, you know, what's an issue that we need to be correcting in these homes? I mean, a lot of the stuff coming out of the Institute of Medicine is like from 2000 and 2004. I mean, it's outdated.
Right. So, and we've talked about a couple of other things. Hospitals, where you go to get well, actually make you worse, and your work environment as well. So tell us about that.
Well, that's right. I mean, you know, I think, you know, they're trying a lot to now change, you know, what a green hospital is and what it entails. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of these things in medicine, you know, come with, a plethora of chemicals. And, you know, could we build greener hospitals? Yeah, and I think there's a lot of people out there trying to do this. I think it's really important. But, you know, we just battle things all the time, some that are natural, right, and some that aren't. You know, we've got things like asbestos in our environment, especially in older buildings. We have things like arsenic. We have carbon monoxide. We have cockroaches. We have formaldehyde. We have lead. We have mercury. I mean, mold. You've got all your sulfur dioxides, your nitrogen oxides. You've got pesticides. You've got radon. You have rodents, sewer gas, volatile organics, semi-volatiles. I mean, when you start to look at this stuff, Sue, I mean, is it not something that we should be taking seriously? I mean, I can't be the only person that is thinking this and seeing this and saying, wow, like, this is, you know, a lot of the reasons we don't feel well every day.
Right, exactly. I hear a lot of people, they can't explain the headaches they get or the upset stomachs, or they can't sleep. And they said, well, I removed everything from our bedroom and stuff. It could be the drywall. You know, it could be something else. It could be something that's caught in the carpets that's keeping them.
Yeah, the drywall is a big issue. Could have vinyl. I mean, the other thing too, that these smart meters that are going on. I mean, they're putting off microwave ray, and I have one in my house that was put in the house that I purchased, and it wasn't my choice. And I really don't like them. I don't know if you're familiar with the smart meter, but they're being put on.
Yep.
And you have no choice. I mean, the electric and gas companies aren't allowing you to take them off, and they're putting off all kinds of frequency and microwave, and nobody knows what they're doing to us. And they can cause all kinds of...
We actually do know what they're doing, because there are some people that have studied. We just did a show last week with Dr. Plourd. We talked about smart meters and stuff. We actually do know what they're doing. But there are some remedies for that. There's inside our homes, we can put Stetzer Electrics is the one that has this. But you, for all of your EMFs in your homes, like your computers and your high-definition TVs and everything that emits EMFs, it's called Stetzers. And you can go and put those in every outlet, and it blocks all the EMFs. And there's actually one that you can put on your smart meter as well, and it will block the EMFs that you're getting, those microwaves. Yes.
That's great.
So we've talked about that, and they're dangerous. They really are. We're bombarded every day, you know, with all the high-tension wires and the towers, cell towers, and regular electrical towers and stuff. Gosh, the one place that we actually should be safe is our home. That's where we should be safe.
Just as we advance as a civilization, we add more and more mechanical devices and more, you know, ventilation and gadgets, and like people put in their hot tubs, you know, in the bathrooms and all of those, right? Like, you know, you put in, people go and decide, okay, I'm going to put in a hot tub in my bathroom. Well, that's all got, you know, it's motorized, it's got, you know, petroleum-based product, it's got sealers on it, it's got adhesive, you know, glue, lubricants, I mean, all this stuff. And this is right in the bathroom where you're showering and breathing this stuff in.
Right.
So it's things
exactly.
We don't even think about. You know, and that's like technology, right? Like, you know, we went from an old cast iron tub to putting in the system that has all kinds of gadgets and whatever. So it's just, as we advance, I don't think we're studying the stuff as much as we should be.
Absolutely. And another thing that we did when I was growing up, we opened windows. I'm not sure if people actually do that anymore.
Yeah, you know, I think you're right.
Yeah,
people
I know
don't.
I
they
do.
Just keep the, they yeah. go from central air to heat. You know, as soon as it gets cold, they just adjust the thermostat and their air kicks on. But, you know, we really encourage people to, if you're going to do that, there's a lot of really good energy recovery ventilators out there, a lot of good ventilation systems. There's a company that we work with that provides us, we put monitors in people's homes, actually. We call it the black box. And it sits in your home for 8 days. And what is it? What it does is it gives you all your outputs of your volatile organics. So it shows you, like, when you have increases and decreases. It gives you a duration of time to monitor these. It also monitors your carbon dioxide. It can do your radon levels. It can do a whole bunch of different things. And what I find is interesting, if you put one of these in your home, you know, it costs like $150 just to do a test. And it'll give you an indication as to, like, how poor your ventilation is, like where your airflow is coming from, whether it's being pulled from the walls or it's fresh air ventilation. And then you could put a system in to help bring some fresh air in, because commercial buildings typically, like when they're built, homes are built under negative pressure, so you're never going to have fresh air intake. So, you know, but commercial buildings, they typically do this. So, you know, homes, because they build them cheaply and, you know, they just want to put them up and they're not – they're concerned about ventilation, but you can, and that helps improve people's symptoms dramatically if you put a ventilation system in.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I love the fresh air, and being here, I can actually open up the windows more than not. And but in some places like up north, you know, you still have the winter months and stuff. But as soon as I can, you know, I used to live up north, and as soon as I could, I always opened up the windows just to
get
some fresh air.
And then some people, too, they have problems. Like, you know, if you've got pollen allergies, you can't be opening the windows in the spring, especially if you live in a high pollen area. Some people live in more industrial areas, and they don't, where they got burning going on from, you know, fireplaces and everything else. And, you know, it makes it really hard. I deal a lot with chemically sensitive people, and, you know, it makes it difficult for them to open their windows sometimes because they just don't have the fresh air, you know, from
right.
industry or whatnot. So, and it's important that you get it, but, you know, it's not always viable.
Well, it isn't, and it's a shame, too. I mean, I actually miss those days of growing up. Everything seemed so much simpler. It really
mm-hmm.
did. We didn't worry about, you know, smart meters or EMFs or you know, all that kind of stuff. And actually, we made our own cleaning products. You know, my grandmother always said it was lye soap and water.
Right.
That's what it was.
Well, as we advanced,
I mean,
and we became more mechanical, and then we used more chemicals as a society. I mean, look at what's transpired. And we don't know the effects of any of these things on us. Nobody's doing studies to be able to tell us what, you know, we put out new products, new computers, new laptops, LCD screens, LED screens. I mean, there's no health reports to tell us whether or not, like, what are they going to do to us long term? Do they cause migraines? Do they not? Nobody knows. So, you know, launch all these products.
Yeah. Right, but when the reports finally do come out, let's take cell phones, for example. When they do come out and they're talking about tumors and cancers and things like that from cell phones, people don't want to believe that because they don't want to give up that service.
Well,
you would probably know better
than I did, but, I mean, from what I heard, you know, California had the labels that were going to go on cell phones that basically said, look, you know, this is carcinogenic or whatever, and they were blocked by, you know, corporate lawyers, and basically, you know, came under the First Amendment right saying, you know, you can't do this, it's going to ruin our company. I mean, that's what I heard. But the information's been out, you know, for a long time that these things contribute.
Yes. Yeah, we always have that at the conference, and we have somebody there that talks about it, and Dr. Plord's going to be there to talk about that. And they have some remedies that you can actually do, and they have great advice. So, I mean, you take care of stuff like that. You take care of your home. You watch what you eat. I think you should be in pretty good shape.
Sounds good to me.
I know. Well, you know, I've learned a lot. And just a little bit of conversation we had before, you know, I asked my husband, I said, well, what kind of plumbing do we have? Because I don't know that. And I said, maybe I should. I knew everything else, but I didn't know about the plumbing, so he filled me in because he takes care of the plumbing.
And what kind did you have? Do you have copper? copper cuts?
I have actually PVC.
So you have PVC. Now, see, with me, when I went to remodel my bathroom, I didn't want to use PVC pipes at all because of, you know, the PVC ending up in the water stream and the water supply. So, and sometimes, you know, it depends on what you can use. You know, you have the option. I did, in part of my dream trap, I went with an ABS. I tried to stick, you know, strictly with copper, but then I had some issues where you had to use, like, a solder. You know, the old copper, when you would solder drains, you'd have to use, like, a lead solder combination, and I didn't want to do that. So then I went with more of, I went with the ABS. So, you know, there's different options, and you have to weigh them out, and not all products are the same. And like I said, you make choices.
Right.
I prefer, you know,
and
metal copper piping.
Right. If you're considering purchasing a home, these are questions maybe that you should find the answers to before you
mm-hmm.
make that purchase. You could save yourself a lot of money in the long run if you don't want PVC or you don't want copper, whatever it is you want that you think is best for you. Maybe those are things that, you know, that you should be asking. What kind of HVAC? You know, a lot of women, and men, some men too, but they don't know what kind of system they have. Or like the piping. I mean, I didn't even bother to ask until you brought it up the other day, and it's like, oh, wait, I don't know that answer, and I should know that answer. So we should ask. We should get this all down in writing and see where, you know, how long has the plumbing been since it's been redone or checked or whatever. These are things maybe we should be asking.
And also, too, I think, like, you know, my preference is, like, when people come to me and they have asthma and allergies, chemical sensitivity is a big one, you know, what kind of house? I kind of say, like, I like the 1970s for people who, you know, had chemical sensitivity because you're going to have less asbestos. You may have a little lead, but you've got baseboard heat. You get a wood structure. You don't go with, you know, the newer vinyl and the OSB board. You know, they still built with, in the 70s, they still were building with a lot of wood and natural product. So, like, somebody like that would do better with that environment. Now, if you had somebody who, say, had a copper, people have copper allergies, right? So they're not going to want to use copper piping. It depends what your health needs are, too. Different things will work for different people, and different things may be better or worse depending on, you know, what your medical condition are and what you have.
Right, exactly. But, you know, these are things that I don't think cross people's minds. To ask,
no,
you know, yeah, usually they'll say, oh, well, you know, does the plumbing work? Not what kind is it? Or,
right.
You know, how long has it been since the HVAC or the heat and the air conditioner, how long has it been serviced? They don't even know what kind it is until they get
right.
in there.
Right, or they don't know if they have, I mean, if I ask people, do you have forced hot air heat or do you have baseboard heat? People don't know. They have no idea. Do you have steam radiator?
Right.
Do you have a heat pump? Do you have global thermal? You know,
right.
Do you have a geothermal? So, no, they really don't know. People, I mean, it's unbelievable, you know, that people really just have no idea, but they don't. And I understand they're working. That's not their expertise. Just like, you know, when people call you for medical advice or say, you know, what would be good here or who do you think I should see for this or, you know, that's your specialty. They're not going to know that because that's not their specialty. Maybe they're an accountant. Maybe they're a lawyer. Maybe they're a medical rep. Whatever it is, that's their specialty, not, you know, I guess that's why we all need each other to be able to provide the information we provide and help, you know, determine what's going on. But I think that leaving the house out or leaving out your work environment when you're making a diagnosis is a big mistake. I think there's too many things in a home that cannot be right. I mean, just sewer gas alone. I mean, I had a woman who was sick for, she had to be sick for 10 years, and nobody could figure out what was wrong with her. Kids were sick, and she'd been all over the place, and she had open septic, like, drains in her basement. We went in. I said, let me check. I want to check your sewer gas. And I checked it. And see, this is where a visual inspection wouldn't do me any good because, you know, I can't tell if the drain's leaking. So I did air samples, and sure enough, she had sewer gas. And the minute we figured out what the source was and we closed up the traps, they were open in the basement. They were like drains that went to the sewer system. I guess they were designed to actually be used if there was ever a flood. But the chances that there was no flood and those gas lines remained open. You know, if you don't have in your trap, if you don't fill it with water frequently, you know, in your sink or whatever, you'll get sewage gas that comes up. So, but these were just open traps because the traps had, I mean, the open lines because the traps had dried out and they were going right out to the septic system, so out to the sewer lines. So she was, this woman was sick for 10 years. I mean, like, really, really, really sick. Her kids were sick. They couldn't go to school. And that's basically what it was, sewer gas. I mean, I could tell you clients, I had a client who was sick in her bedroom. She kept complaining, and she called me, and, you know, I did an air sample, and it came back. There was gun solvent, high levels of gun solvent in the room. And I told her, I said, look, you've got major amounts of gun solvent. I said, I'm just the messenger. I'm not here to, you know, I'm just telling you, well, we don't have guns, and your test is wrong, and, you know, you're wrong. And she called and apologized. She said, you know, I spoke with my husband. He had been cleaning his gun. She didn't even know he had one. Cleaning it in the bedroom.
Right. And absolutely.
I mean, the stories go on and on, like perk dry cleaning and people being sick, you know, bringing in dry cleaning. You really want to air out your dry cleaning for 24 hours, just take it out of the plastic bag. I mean, it's best to get an organic dry cleaner. I mean, I don't dry clean at all, but if you have to, you know, get an organic dry cleaner. If you don't want to do that, then at least take the stuff out of the plastic bag and air it out for 24 hours outside, because it really does reduce the amount of perk tremendously. You know, just leave the stuff outside, let it air out. You'll have a lot less issues. But, you know, I had people get sick from perk. I've had clients who, a woman who had COPD, her and her husband were going to divorce. She was so sick in her house. They had bought this dream house. They had moved there. They had pets, a lot of pets, two dogs, two cats. Well, she was so sick. She was like, they were fighting over the house, and she didn't feel good, and she had moved out. They were on the verge of getting a divorce because it was so stressful. And I came in, somehow they found me, and we tested, and they had extremely high amounts of dander, and I mean, really, really high. I said, look, this is not helping. You have COPD. This cannot be helping you. I said, let's remove the dander. Let's remove some of the pets and just see if it helps. And, I mean, sure enough, she was fine. We made it. So she had to get rid of a couple of the pets, but we reduced the level down, and they were able to live there. And, you know, I mean, this stuff is stressful. People get really sick, and they just need, you know, things looked at, examined, and they don't know where to go. And once you go to the doctor and, you know, they don't have an answer for you, you know, you feel sort of left behind. It's you know, and this is just, I mean, case after case after case. This happens all the time.
Well, doctors don't seem to ask those pertinent questions. You know, I've seen a lot of doctors, you know, their intake forms, and I have yet to see anything at all about the home. I mean, they'll ask about diet, they'll ask about exercise, they'll ask about current or past, well, not even really past medications, which is another thorn in my side there. But they'll ask about all those things, but I don't see anything on any of them to ask about the home. You know, not what year is the home built, have you done renovations? None of those questions are on an intake form.
Yeah, and they should be. And the thing is, too, I mean, listen, in a doctor's behalf, there's so much they have to do every day. I mean, it has become, you know, they don't have the time. I mean, they're just, and this all takes time. Like, when you're trying to diagnose a patient, it takes time. It's not something that you're just going to go in and boom, 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 you're done. If it were that easy, you know, everybody would be doing it. It doesn't work that way, and the body's so complex and complicated, and there's so many different things that can affect it, and it's not an easy job. But, you know, I think my job is to help make other physicians' jobs easier by providing this information, saying, look, this is the assessment we've done. These are the things that don't look right in the home. These are the tests that we've performed. You know, look, could this be contributing to their symptoms? But I think when you have symptoms that aren't diagnosed, specifically things like, you know, fibromyalgia, Lyme's disease, chronic fatigue syndrome, these things that we don't know what causes them, I think you need to start looking at environmental factors. I think it's a contributing component. I think that, you know, maybe you got Lyme's disease, but you're also living in a house that's moldy with mycotoxin, and then you got, you know, I don't know, 15 pets. And, you know, is it really a surprise why your immune system crashes? It can only deal with so much. Your body can only detox so much. It starts working overtime.
Right, exactly, yes.
And the things that normally it would be able to deal with, like, you know, bacteria, microorganisms in the environment, which I think that we are really designed to be able to deal with, I think that your body's equipped. But then it says, oh, my gosh, well, I'm exposed to cigarettes and the copier and all these chemicals at work and perfume and Glade. It's like, oh, my God, like I got, you know, spray over here and this over there. And, you know, so then the body just breaks down. It can't handle it.
Right, exactly. And that's when we get bedridden.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of people there, but and especially kids. You know, we have a lot of kids with the ADD, ADHD. We never heard about that when I was growing up. I mean, like, wow. And it's just an autism and things like that. And this is important for us to know because if it is environmental in our home, then and we get rid of it, we fix it, you know, our symptoms, the kids' symptoms could go away.
Well, the interesting thing that I found over the 13 years of doing this, and it's not that I can say that, you know, make claims that that this is the case, but I find it interesting that when I have analyzed homes with children with autism or children on the spectrum, their volatile organic levels, their TVOC level, has been extremely high. Now, if you bring a newborn home and you put them in a room that's got 3,000 volatile organic compounds, right, or a TVOC level that's 3,000, I mean, is this healthy for an infant that's developing with brain development? I don't
right.
think so. You know,
no.
And I've seen this correlation over the years of doing this. I mean, I'm not making claims that you know, TVOCs are contributing to autism because that's not my place. But what I'm saying is I see a correlation. I see that these TVOC levels are high and they children in the home are not or somewhere maybe on the spectrum or having developmental delays. What does that mean?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, may mean everything. It may mean nothing. It may mean, but the fact is, let's remove it. Let's take it out and see if the kids improve. Let's take it out as one of the contributing factors to poor health. You know, it doesn't need to be there, so why not remove it?
Right, exactly. And it could be something that was left over from the previous owner or the previous tenant, or it could be if you
typically.
Have a new home. Yeah,
typically.
Typically, yeah.
Though, most of these contributors are things that you're currently doing. It's very rare that a TVOC level will be high. It's usually like paint cans, storing products, you know, storing materials. It's typically stuff that's currently active. So it's not that it's usually left behind, though a lot of these things, you know, someone uses a lot of perfume. You ever smell a cabinet after somebody's used, you know, tons of perfume,
yeah.
Hair products, whatever. You open the cabinet, you buy a new house, the cabinet reeks. It'll reek forever. It just it permeates
right.
everything. It stays in there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, colognes will do that. Perfume will do that.
Well, and people with bringing home children and stuff, you know, they've always painted the room and put new carpet in and stuff like that. I don't think
right away,
really
right? They're doing that, and the child's an infant. It's like the worst. I mean, to me, it's like the worst thing you could do. Why are you exposing your infant to like all these harmful chemicals? And I understand you want to make it well. You know, you want to make it a beautiful environment for them. But again, we had this discussion, right? Like, okay, beautifying versus structural and healthy. It's like different, right? I mean, and you can still have a beautiful home and use low VOC paints and stuff. Of course you can. You know, but you have
sure.
to make these choices, you know. But a lot of people aren't doing that. They're like, okay, well, the, you know, a low VOC paint is a lot more expensive, so I'm not going to purchase it. And in defense, a lot of these, like, they'll take one chemical out and substitute it for something else. Like, I've talked to a lot of lab technicians, you know, people in the lab, and a lot of top analysts at the labs. And they basically say, look, if you get a low VOC paint, basically what it does is it's a chemical at a lower level that's exposure over a greater period of time versus if you paint with a non-VOC, you know, like non-low VOC paint, just a traditional latex paint, you're going to get like this influx of chemicals and then it'll dissipate faster. So, I mean, what's worse, right? Is it better to have all these chemicals and you air it out really quick and then it's gone, or is it and you know, you don't stay in the house when it's being painted, or do you paint with this low VOC paint that you think is okay, and then you're exposed to it over a longer duration? And
right,
it's funny,
exactly.
the people – go ahead.
Well, I don't even think that people realize they have a choice. You know,
right.
they go to a Home Depot or a Lowe's or some other hardware store or whatever, and buy. They have three or four choices of paints, And they just, usually that's what they do, is pick the cheapest one.
Right, because it's a financial factor. And then, you know, the more expensive paints, again, you know, it's still left to be determined. You know, you got to be careful what paint you buy. They have a lot of, you know, fungicides, moldicides in them. There's a lot of, just because something's low VOC doesn't necessarily mean it's healthy. You know, they're swapping out this chemical for that chemical. So I think the biggest thing is, look, you're going to do renovation. You really shouldn't be hanging around while it's being done. Let's put it that way.
Right.
You know?
Right. Exactly.
Remove yourself from the environment. If you have to do the work, try to pick the best products you can. Try to pick things that are going to have no or low odor. There's a lot of great caulks and things that you can use that, you know, are silicone, and they don't have all the additives in it. You know, try to reduce things. Like, if you can buy a product that has one chemical in it versus one that has 10, pick the less. You know, pick some.
Right.
Look at relabels. Look at MSDS sheets, you know, material safety data sheets are, like, so important. Every product's got them. So pick up a sheet. And if you don't know what's in it, then you call someone like my company, and we'll tell you, you know, do a consult, whatever. Just, you know, find out what's in your products and pick something that's going to be better for you.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, again, what is your website so that we can get
people...
Okay,
so they can go to healthyhomeexpert.com or myhealthyhome.info. Our phone number is 866-743-8563, and we do all kinds of testing for molds, allergens, dander, volatile organic, semi-volatiles, you know, whatever you want to know about your house, you know, if your home is healthy. And then, you know, we sell all kinds of products from, you know, dehumidifiers to UV light systems to, you know, things that are going to improve ventilation, whatever you need, we have. And, you know, of course, we carry personal care products and green products of that nature, too, though, you know, people can pick them up almost anywhere now. It's just important that you switch over to something that's going to be a lot healthier for you.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much for being here today. This has been an eye-opener. It really has. And everyone out there, you have a choice. As Caroline says, you have a choice. Make sure you know what you're putting in your home. It's like the same thing when you read the label and you can't pronounce it or you don't know what it is for your body, and you want to know exactly what it is that you are putting on your walls, in your home. Call Caroline. Call her and find out. Do a consult with her and find out if you're getting the best product for your healthy home. And everyone, make sure you come, call, whatever, about the 2014 Physicians Roundtable. It's March 13th through 16th in Tampa. We have some complimentary tickets. Give me a call at 717-254-1953, and we'll make sure you're on the list so that you can get all this information. Caroline, it has been a pleasure.
You too, Sue. And I just, you know, I want to tell people that I think what you're doing is so fabulous. And I think the idea here is to improve medicine, improve how we diagnose problems overall, and just make the whole process better. And I think that's what you're doing. And I think, listen, kudos to you for doing it. I think that it needs it. You know, we just need better health in general, and we need to look and access everything that we have and all the information in order to make better diagnoses and help solve health issues. So, like,
absolutely.
What you're
people
doing is
trained,
just phenomenal.
Right. People are trained. They're just not educated. So that's what you and I both do. And kudos to you as well. Everyone, next week we are going to be talking about Lyme and microbes with Barb Smith, and she's going to be here to talk about that. Same time, same place, and we'll see you next Sunday. Thanks, Caroline.
Thanks, Sue. Bye.
Bye.
Save the dates, March 13th through 16th, 2014, and join us in Tampa, Florida for the 2014 Physicians Roundtable. Hear over 20 expert speakers, visit with exceptional exhibitors, dance to the music of the Island Boys, get a free caricature done, relax at the Tibetan Bowl Concert, get points and inspiration to write, and let's not forget the CME, gift bags, and so much more. The Physicians Roundtable conferences have always been about bringing the best to the podium, the best in products and services to those that deserve it the most, you. So call us at 717-254-1953 or email us at PureAwMagazine@AOL.com to reserve your seat or exhibit space.
Hi, friends. InfoGuy here. If you're listening to In Short Order, as thousands do each week, how about getting your product or service in front of the listeners? Come advertise on In Short Order for as little as $25 per show. Please note that space is limited and all ads must be in harmony with In Short Order's platform. Email us at peeropmagazine@aol.com or call us at 717-254-1953 for more details.